All right. Elijah goes home. Title. I don't title them all, but I titled this one, Cindy, Elijah Goes Home. You'd never know it, but this was the title of the message that was assigned 3 weeks ago. Well, three of the sermons ago in this series. I guess you could say I got sidetracked. Elijah didn't go home 3 weeks ago. We're going to get Elijah home, I hope, tonight. Anyway, last time we saw something that served as a warning to us. Watch what you grasp for. Grasp for God. Remember that? And Ahaziah's name means Yahweh has grasped. And we saw that the first and second captains of 50 did not grasp for God. Ahaziah certainly didn't grasp for God. The majority of the people in the northern kingdom of Israel did not grasp for God. They followed Ahaziah's example. Elisha, though, in the second chapter, knew what to grasp for, and he would not leave Elijah alone. We'll look at that again, but in a little different kind of a thought tonight. Our lesson was, you better be careful what you grasp for. What we never got to was the obvious big event in chapter 2, Elijah goes home. First thing I want us to see from this passage of scripture, and we'll begin in verse 1, and we'll just work our way through the text, is an unmovable commitment. Elisha has an unmovable or unshakable commitment to follow his mentor. Verse 1, chapter 2, 2 Kings. It came to pass, when the Lord would take up Elijah into heaven by a whirlwind, that Elijah went with Elisha from Gilgal. First thing you want to see is there's an amount of pre-existing knowledge here. And it seems to be a pretty well-known fact. Listen to the way that verse reads again. It came to pass when the Lord would take up Elijah by a whirlwind. I mean, we even know the omniscient narrator has given us all this information from the beginning here. And everyone in the account, the historical account, seems to know that Elijah's going and Elisha's not. They all seem to know it. They may know that Elisha is to take Elijah's place, but we can't assume that much. We know that Elijah knows Elisha is his replacement, but we can't assume all the sons of the prophets know it. But they do seem to have an advance notice that Elijah's days are numbered and today is the day. There's a part of me that does want to know what the day of the rapture is. But there's a bigger part of me that goes, that would not be a good idea. I know we all want, true believers want to go home to heaven. I know we do. That's where my statement, you can't threaten me with heaven, comes from. Can't wait. But I bow to God's wisdom in not telling us. I really do. There's a certain dynamic tension that exists in a Christian's life. You live and work for the Lord like this is your last day, but you hope that it is your last day, and you just don't know. It's a tug of war there. Okay, look with me at verse 2. And Elijah said to Elisha, tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord hath sent me to Bethel. And Elisha said to him, as the Lord liveth and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. So they went down to Bethel. Now, the thing to notice is in verse 3, the sons of the prophets that were at Bethel came forth to Elisha and they said, hey, Elisha, don't you know? Knowest thou the Lord will take away your master from your head today? They knew. Knowledge is pretty specific there. Today. Look at verse 5. The sons of the prophets that were at Jericho came to Elisha and said to him, hey, knowest thou that the Lord will take thy master from thy head today? It's two separate groups of prophets. 50 here, 50 there. Bethel, Jericho. Now, if you're thinking clearly, and if you've paid attention in the last couple of Sunday evenings when we've looked at this, you might be wondering, where exactly did these prophets come from? I thought Jezebel killed them all. Turn back a page or two or three to 1 Kings 18. You're going to remember this as soon as you see it. You're going to, oh yeah, that's right. Came to pass after many days in verse 1 of chapter 18. The word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year, saying, go show yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain upon the earth. Remember that? Okay. Elijah went to show himself to Ahab, and there was a sore famine in Samaria. And Ahab called Obadiah, who was the governor of Ahab's house. Now, Obadiah feared the Lord greatly, for it was so when Jezebel cut off the prophets of the Lord that Obadiah took how many? 100. And hid them by how many? 50 in a cave and fed them with bread and water. Most likely, these two groups of 50 got to be so familiar with each other in the caves that they just stayed together. They established, they became the clientele or the student body of two schools, sons of the prophets. These are most likely the men saved by Obadiah. Remember, we're looking at the unmovable commitment of Elisha. And the thing here is that in the face of everybody seems to know, he doesn't waver even the slightest little bit. Sometimes you might think you're the only one. Elijah certainly did when he was in his state of depression. What did he say? I, Lord, am left, a prophet of Jehovah. And we know that wasn't true. We just looked at the 100 that Obadiah saved. Elisha might have gotten a taste of that, but in a reverse kind of fashion. All these guys must think I'm really stupid or something, that I don't know what's going on. They're all telling me, you know, your master's going to be taken from your head today. Yeah, I know. Shh. I know. But in spite of all that, he stays unwaveringly committed to Elijah. Stay committed to the Lord. Don't waver. I don't care who wins the election. I mean, I care. But I don't care who wins the election because God is still in control. And we can't waver. Just stay the course. Even Elijah is trying to get Elisha to give it up. Look at verse 2. Elijah said to Elisha, tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord hath sent me to Bethel. Look at verse 4. And Elijah said to him, Elisha, stay here, I pray thee, for the Lord has sent me to Jericho. Look at verse 6. And Elijah said to him, tarry, I pray thee here, stay here, for the Lord has sent me to Jordan. Three times the two men have had this back and forth conversation. Look at verse 2 again. Elisha said, as the Lord lives and as thy soul lives, I will not leave thee. So they went down to Bethel. Look at verse 4 again, in the middle of it. As the Lord liveth and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. So they came to Jericho. Look at verse 6 again, in the middle. As the Lord liveth and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. And they too went on. Elijah, stay here. Elisha, I'm not leaving you. Stay here. I'm not leaving. Stay here. I'm not going anywhere. So the 50 men, verse 7, of the prophets went, the sons of the prophets, and they stood to view afar off. And they too, who, Elijah and Elisha, went and stood by Jordan. And Elijah took Jordan's river, right? Elijah took the mantle, wrapped it together, smote the waters. And they were divided hither and thither so that the two went over on dry ground. You know, it would make a neat series, wouldn't it, Nat, just to discover the number of times God let people walk across bodies of water on dry ground. Just focus on that. That'd be kind of fun one time. Verse 8, we see Elijah using his mantle. This is the outer piece of clothing. It'd be like me taking off the suit jacket. The mantle is that piece of clothing that identifies him as a prophet of God. In this day and age, when someone stands in the pulpit and wears a suit, that ought to identify him as a pastor. Sadly, it doesn't a lot of times. Why do I wear a suit? Why don't I preach in my jeans and t-shirt? I know men who literally do. Well, it doesn't matter, does it? What do we say today about God and his holiness? Is he not worthy of me wearing my best clothing? When I handle the word of God, I do not want... Now, if I was at a camp, that's different. We're at a camping situation. Jesus did not wear a suit and a tie, by the way. I'd like to get the inventor of the tie and string him up with one, but that's another story. But in his day, Jesus was dressed appropriately. So were the other people. And the prophet here is dressed appropriately for his position and his place of authority. Everybody would recognize Elijah the prophet by his mantle, by what he wore. And he took that mantle and he used it to part the sea. Look at 1 Kings chapter 19. Because you'll remember this too. God has just given Elijah his pep talk and told him to get back to work. So Elijah departed in verse 19. He found Elisha, the son of Shaphat, who was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen before him, and he with the 12th. And Elijah passed by him, and what did he do? He cast his mantle upon him. Boy, there's a lot of symbolism there. But there's the sign of the prophet. He cast his mantle upon him. That's tantamount to saying, you are the chosen one, you follow me. I'm going to teach you everything I know. You and I are going to walk with God together until God takes me. You're going to be prophet in my place, and I know it. And this is telling you that. So now Elijah uses his cloak just as Moses used his rod to part the Red Sea, to turn it into a snake. All the things that God, you go back through Exodus and the beginning chapters and see all the things that God, that Moses used that rod for. Came to pass in verse 9. When they were gone over, that Elijah said to Elisha, now they're on the other side. They're separated from the 50 prophets who are watching at a distance by the Jordan River. Elijah said to Elisha, ask what I shall do for thee before I be taken away from thee. That's kind of a normal thing back in that culture. And Elisha said, I pray thee, let a double portion of thy spirit be upon me. Now this time, we have a different question. Instead of you stay here while I go, I'm not leaving you. You stay here, I'm not leaving. You stay here, I'm not leaving. Instead of that, now we have, what can I do for you before I go? And it almost seems that Elijah recognizes that Elisha has passed the loyalty test. He has endured whatever this length of time was, and however long they walked together as mentor and mentee, he has spent that time with Elijah, and Elisha has been faithful. And if I miss the two names back and forth once in a while, you just smile sweetly and understand. Okay, you come on up here and say Elijah and Elisha 50,000 times without getting mixed up. Elisha said, I pray thee, let a double portion of thy spirit be upon me. Everyone knows, we've read that everyone knows, that Elijah is going to turn things over to Elisha. God has already determined that Elisha will be the prophet in Elijah's place. All that remains is for the actual changing of the guard. Now, this request might seem to be a little greedy to me and you. I want twice as much as anybody else. But it's not. Furthermore, it was not uncommon at all for prophets to give a valuable parting blessing to the ones who would be left behind. The question would be, but a double one? Double portion in the ancient Near East, particularly in Israel, was given to the firstborn. In Deuteronomy 21:17, he, meaning the father, shall acknowledge the son of the hated for the firstborn by giving him a double portion of all that he has, for he is the beginning of his strength. The right of the firstborn is his. The firstborn got a double portion. Paul, you're in good shape. The rest of them? Tough beans, right? So what does Elijah say? You've asked a hard thing. That's tough. That's a tall order. That's a big request. Nevertheless, if thou see me when I'm taken from thee, it shall be so unto thee. But if not, then it shall not be so. It's a hard thing for Elijah because God is the one who gives the prophets the office and God is the one who blesses the prophets. You don't get to pick your successor sometimes. You've asked a hard thing. The relationship between Elijah and Elisha is indeed a father-son kind of relationship. They have been together for some time. Elijah did want to give a blessing to Elisha, but he also wants to see his spiritual son remain faithful to the last moment. I'm struck by how many people in our culture seem to remain faithful for a long period of time, and then toward the very end of their life, they give up. And they flip. Or they do something that's completely... I can't explain it sometimes. I really can't. I would think as you got older and wiser, it would be easier to remain faithful. You've remained faithful. Okay, I'm 67. I've tried very hard to remain faithful ever since I came to the realization that that's how I was supposed to live. By this point, I've only got a few years. I tease my wife. You know, my grandfather died at 81 of cancer. My father died at 81 of cancer. So what have I got, 14 years? I can make 14 more years being faithful. But for some reason, and he says, so if you see me go, then it will be so. Well, you can't get much longer than to see him actually go. That's the end. And if you don't see me go, it shall not be so. Verse 11. Came to pass, as they still went on and talked, that behold, there appeared a chariot of fire and horses of fire and parted them both asunder. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. Now, I'm sorry, Sunday school teachers, but for years and years and years, the Sunday school flannel graph, do you remember flannel? You guys know what flannel graph is? Keeps going. Yeah. Flannel graph, that stuff you stick on the soft cloth thing. Elijah did not go up in the chariot. If he did, he'd have been toast by the time he got there. It's a chariot of fire with horses of fire. It separates Elijah from Elisha. The chariot separates them. Elijah is going and Elisha is not. And he gets caught up in the whirlwind. Biblically speaking, death means separation. But in this case, Elijah becomes the second man to leave this earth without dying. Enoch and Elijah. So, the commitment of Elisha was there. Second, we see an unbroken leadership. Verse 12. Elisha saw it. And he cried, my father, my father! The chariot of Israel and the horsemen thereof. And he saw him no more. And he took hold of his own clothes and he rent them in two pieces. His cry, my father, is proof that he is viewed as a spiritual son of Elijah. His tearing of his clothes, it's the outer garment. Usually the sign of great sorrow was to rend your clothes and sit in sackcloth and ashes. Elisha is not an ambitious man. We're going to see that in our study as we follow his career along further in 2 Kings. But he will very soon here pick up the mantle. Look at verse 13. He took up also the mantle of Elijah that fell from him, and he went back and stood by the bank of Jordan. Unbroken leadership. The symbol of the prophet and the authority of the prophet and his leadership as a prophet passes from Elijah to Elisha in a moment, so to speak. And he picks it up and he goes back and he stands by the river Jordan. Now look at verse 14. He took the mantle of Elijah that fell from him and he smote the waters and he said, "Where is the Lord God of Elijah?" And when he also had smitten the waters, they parted hither and thither, and Elisha went over. Unbroken leadership. He wastes no time at all in his new position and the duties that are entailed with it. He uses the mantle, the symbol of his new position and his authority, and he went with it and crossed back over, because you got to get back to work. You've got to get back to work. In verse 14, it is God who exalts Elisha, not Elisha. And in doing so, God is honoring Elijah's ministry and his life. Elijah, you have trained your mentee well. Elijah, you come home. The symbol of your authority goes to the next man, and he immediately picks it up. That's leadership that doesn't miss a beat. It moves right on. We have a lot of trouble in our churches today because we don't know how to transition from one leader to another. I greatly dislike the American Christian, even Baptist church model of sending resumes and receiving resumes and pulpit committees comparing resumes. Do you know how it happens in the New Testament? Well, in the early part of the time, the apostles put pastors in places. But when the apostles all died, they didn't send resumes out. They called the new pastor from within the church family. That's how I would like this church, our church family, to transition to a new pastor. Not tomorrow. I'm not going anywhere. But in the future, when it is my time to step aside and allow my successor to take over. I did not follow immediately in the footsteps of Nat. I wish I had. Nat is the example of the kind of pastor who can stay in the church that he no longer pastors. I want to be like Nat. I've told you that before. I want to be like Nat. I want this church to have been mentoring me and the deacons to have been mentoring the next pastor, who, when I am ready to retire, he simply starts to take over. You don't have to go through all that other nonsense. You know the person. You know the individual. These sons of the prophets knew Elisha. They knew him quite well. He had been spending his time with Elijah. He had Elijah's approval and God's approval, because as soon as he calls on God to part the water, he does. That's the sign of God's approval. Those in authority need to remember that. This morning, we started to see how a church selects its pastors and deacons. How does it do it? Spirit-filled people, regenerate people, indwelt believer priests are ready to come together and say, "This man, we reckon, by the way, do you realize you don't actually choose the next pastor? God does." When a man is brought before a congregation and the church votes, they are, by that vote, agreeing with God that this man will be our next pastor. And when they go counter to that, that's when you have pastors that don't work out. I praise the Lord for this church. I want us to do things right. I want us to do them by the book, this book. Too many pastors think it's all about them. It is not. We could pull out of here tonight in the car and get hit by a tractor trailer. We could pull out of here tonight and a chariot of fire would come down on Clemensville Road and separate me from you, and I'd be gone and y'all be here. I'd like that. Are you understanding what I'm saying about this leadership thing? God never intends for a flock to be without a shepherd. Ever. You know what sheep do when they don't have a shepherd? Every direction under the sun. Let another man praise thee. Let not thine own mouth, a stranger, and not thine own lips. That's what Elisha is doing. God is praising him. God is setting him up. God is approving of him. God has approved of Elijah and taken him home. And God is approving of Elisha in his place. When the sons of the prophets, verse 15, which were to view at Jericho, saw him, they said, look at this. The spirit of Elijah doth rest on Elisha. No, the spirit of God did. But they're recognizing that Elisha is taking Elijah's place. And they came to meet him. And what did they do? They bow themselves to the ground before him. That's not worship. That's reverence and respect. I was really, really impressed when I went to Bangladesh in 2008. That was my first trip there. It was my first teaching experience. I met these 24 men, taught them for 3 weeks, two college courses. But there was another man there who had been there for many, many years teaching. He taught at the master's level. And then there was the headmaster of the school, Dr. John Shirkar. And when some of these men were getting ready to leave and go back to their homes, they would bow down on the ground in front of John Shirkar and kiss his feet. You know what that was? Respect. Respect and honor to the man who ran the school, who established the school, who I suspect in many cases paid for them to be there. It's not worship of John Shirkar. It was respect and honor that was to him. And that's the same thing here. This is respect and honor being paid to Elisha. Of course, there's a downside to most things. Their spiritual immaturity begins to show. And we have, number three, an unlearned cadre. And all the young people are going, what's a cadre? Well, it's a word that begins with C, and I like it. A cadre is a small group or a nucleus of trained personnel that are able to assemble and teach others. Okay, it might be a little bit of a stretch. But what are the sons of the prophets training to do? Eventually become prophets and teach others, right? So I used an unlearned cadre. Here they are. Look at verse 16. They said, behold, now there be with thy servants 50 strong men, 50 us. Let us go and pray thee. We pray thee and seek thy master. Lest, perhaps, peradventure, the Spirit of the Lord has taken him up and cast him upon a mountain. Oh, right. Or into some valley. And Elisha says, no, you shall not send. Picture this for a second. What have these guys witnessed? They knew Elijah was going. We've already talked about that. They knew Elisha was going to take his place. They knew it was going to be today. We already talked about all that. And yet they have the absolute crazy thought, maybe the Spirit of God took that great man Elijah, who we've watched and had a part of him beating the prophets of Baal, and that guy, and maybe the Lord, Spirit of the Lord took him and threw him on a mountain somewhere. What? I every time I read that, all throughout the years, I scratch my head and go, what are you people thinking? Elisha, a direct witness to what just happened on the other side of the river. He knows Elijah is not dashed on some mountain, says, no, you are not going to do that. You know, generally, when we say something to our teenagers and we give them that, what are you crazy look, even if we don't say, what are you crazy, we give them the, no, they know we're thinking you're crazy. I can just see Elisha doing that. No. I think he said we were just crazy. No, he didn't say that. But did you see his face and his eyes and the tone? Well, yeah, maybe. The weak among them, however, make him feel ashamed, which tells us that they kept badgering him. Not like teenagers. Sorry, guys, I'm not picking on y'all tonight. So they urged him till he was ashamed, and he said, all right, go. So they sent 50 men, and they sought for 3 days, but they didn't find him. Well, of course they didn't find him. Duh. He's not there. He's nowhere to be found. He is not dashing on a mountain or in some valley. Well, why did Elisha relent and let them go? It's a good question. The text doesn't specifically say. Perhaps Elisha himself was maybe weakened a little bit. Maybe he wasn't quite strong enough yet spiritually or emotionally. But I doubt that. Maybe he wanted them to learn what he already knew. Possible. Maybe he simply allowed them to satisfy themselves and see what God had done. Or perhaps this. Since they are sons of the prophets and since they are in training, perhaps he did what good leaders sometimes do. Gave them enough rope to hang themselves. Not literally. Let the trainees go off and do whatever dumb thing catches their fancy simply because they're insistent. Many years ago, I mean many, this doesn't fit perfectly, but it does a little bit, I had this bright idea. I'm going to ride from South Jersey up to Cornell University where they study rabbits, and I'm going to get me 30 New Zealand white bunny rabbits. And I'm going to get them all tagged in the ears and numbered, and we're going to raise rabbits and kill it for food. This will be great! Because I read in Mother Earth News or whatever crazy magazine it was that New Zealand white rabbits are the fastest growing and the greatest production of meat for the amount of feed in the shortest amount of time of nearly any domesticated food animal. Tom, don't you laugh at me now. So the day came. The boss had just bought me a brand new Ford 350 pickup truck with dual wheels on the back. And my neighbor and I hopped in that truck, and the boss said, yeah, go ahead, take it up there. So we drove all the way to Cornell, and we put 30 bunny rabbits in the back of that truck. And my wife all the time is going, are you sure you want to do this? Do you know Jennifer and Glenn aren't really going to want to kill white rabbits and eat them? I'll take care of that when they're not around, and we'll tell them they're chicken nuggets, or they're like chicken nuggets. We brought those rabbits home. Where are you going to put them all? Well, I had an old chicken coop. The chickens had died, so we were going to do rabbits now. Rabbits don't lay eggs, unfortunately. But I'm not going to go there. It's a really hot day, so we get back with... We went up there and loaded 30 rabbits and came back with about 26. Anyway, we get home, and I put all these rabbits in the cages. They're bunnies. You know, they're not ready to breed yet. And I farmed one out to my brother-in-law and two or three out to another friend who had a bunch of rabbits and a couple more over here and a couple there. And by the time I got done, I had like 16 or 18. I had all the does in the right cages and all the bucks in another spot. And I'm going to breed these rabbits. And so we did. We got a couple litters of rabbits and we did eat some. But I'll tell you what. It didn't last long. And I am forever grateful that my wife never said to me, "I told you so." Verse 18. When they came again to him, Elisha, for he had tarried at Jericho, he said, "Did I not say to you, don't go?" Patty never said, "Don't go." Okay, we need to go eat some pie. So here you go. Be like Elisha. Don't be like one of those 50 prophets. Look at the numbers. 50 to 1. 50 to 1. Most people in our world are like the prophets. They're show me people. Prove it to me people. I can't trust. I can't exercise. That's silliness. Religion is for sick people. Was it Lenin that called it the opiate of the people, or was that Hitler? I think it was Lenin. Or Marx. Might have been Marx. Yeah. It's not. It's the truth. But 50 to 1. Look at that ratio. One person who knows, trusts God, he believes Yahweh, he saw where Elijah went, and he tries to tell the 50, "You guys haven't figured it out yet, don't go." They go, often do what they think, and they come back, and Elisha says, "Didn't I tell you, don't go?" Don't be like one of the 50. Most people are like those. Be like Elijah. Hear what God says, believe it, and do that.